Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Juta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavanscha Sri Rupam Sagra Jatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitangtham Sujivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vithangstya Om Jnanati Marandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chaksurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Yes.
What is the function of imagination in terms of spiritual practice, Maharaj? Because we are cautious not to imagine things but wait for spiritual realization.
Yeah. So, just as we hear Saraswati Thakur quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur saying, Netihasa Nikalpanam. The pastimes of Krishna, they're not a historical occurrence. Then what? He says, neither are they imagination. So in this context, imagination means something being projected from our own mental system. Right? The mind is a mundane element. Bhumirupo anulo vayukam manubudhirevacha ahankara itiyame bina prakritirastadha. Krishna identifies earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego as prakriti, and it's material energy. Then in the next verse he says, apareyam itastanyam prakritim vidime puram jiva bhuta mahabaho yayedam daryate jagat. But there's a superior prakriti, right, who is jiva. Right? So he's telling us the soul plane is above the plane of imagination, right? Mind, intellect. One writer referred to novels and that genre and its corollaries as adventures of the intelligence. So it all sounds well and good, but it must necessarily fall short of the spiritual. So if we take it as Srila Guru Maharaj says, when you say, and Shakespeare concurs, right? Guru Maharaj says, chayabas, a shadow representation of the self. So interesting, you'd say Shakespeare, from his imagination, came something good that lands in the general vicinity of the spiritual. He said, out, out, brief candle, life's but a walking shadow, a poor player who struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard from no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. On a lighter note, so out brief candle, that means the temporal nature of life. Life's but a walking shadow. So we can say, well, this seems to be very accurate. Guru Maharaj, what are you saying? Chayabhas. There's the chit jagat and the achit jagat. So, chit jagat means the spiritually conscious world, the spiritual world. Achit jagat means the unconscious, material world, matter. Right? So Guru Maharaj is telling us, for spiritual chit subjects, jiva, to have anything to do with, to navigate the achit, mundane world, they can't do that directly. So there needs to be a shadow self that can move in the objective world. So the body, senses, mind, intellect, and ego are shadow self coverings of Atma. So my imagination being related to the intellect and the mind necessarily will fall short of the spiritual. As we say, we say, well, we just quoted Shakespeare and this is something from his imagination. Yes, you can get some generic spiritual, you can derive generic spiritual conclusions that way. But to get more specific, it won't be a product of the imagination. So when, for example, Rupa Goswami, we talk about the writings of the Goswamis, what he is writing is that imaginative literature. He's writing about reality. And this is something that is difficult to conceive from our present position. So is he writing about something that happened before? Remember, we're in the realm of time and space where there appears to be past, present, and future, although not. So if he's writing something, it doesn't mean a long time ago it happened. He's not writing about things that are confined to the world of time and space. So is he writing real-time, live-streaming leelas coming out of his pen? That would be more accurate. So when you're saying one day in the eternal world that is beyond time and space, this happened. Oh, they have days there? As the Upanishad sloka says, that Prabhupada liked to quote, it says, yeah, there is day and night, but there is no need of day or night. There is sun and moon. There's not need of a sun or moon. What does it mean? Other than the necessity of leela. So for the necessity of leela or divine pastimes, there's day, there's night, there's appears to be some sort of passage of time, but you're in the eternal plane. So as I've mentioned many times, Srila Guru Maharaj distinguishes the position of the rishi as opposed to the imaginative writer. Even Saraswati Thakur, there is one, we could say, well-meaning Bengali gentleman who thought, everyone should hear about Mahaprabhu. So I'm going to take a little bit from Chaitanya Bhagavat, something from Chaitanya Charitamritam, something from Chaitanya Mangal, from these different monks, and present that. Many people thought it was a wonderful thing. When Guru Maharaj brought it to Saraswati Thakur's attention, trying to remember the Bengali, it was something like, Nija Bogila Gauranga, something means, Nija Bog means, he's presented Gauranga according to his own amusement or imagination, what's pleasing to him. That's not what is found in the pages of Chaitanya Charitamrita coming from Krishna's Kaviraj. It's not imaginative literature. He's saying, Madan Mohan is moving my hand, making me write these things. Guru Maharaj says, when Sanatana Goswami is saying, who am I to do a comparative study of the queens of Dwaraka? But higher power is coming down and making me say these things. So it may appear superficially to be imaginative literature, but it's not. It's descending from the upper world into this plane and being expressed as inspiration in the heart of the Vaishnava. So Guru Maharaj made this distinction about rishis. So the Sanskrit word for creation is srishti. Like that sloka in the Brahma Samhita, srishti stiti pralaya shadana shaktareka. And by the way, the next line is chayeva yasya. Interesting. On the point I made, saying bhuvanani bibharti Durga Devi is a shadow of the Chit Shakti. The goddess, gods and goddesses of the world are shadows of representation of the Hladini Shakti. But anyway, so there, srishti, that means creation. So, but Guru Maharaj points out these great saints and mediums for transcendental or divine expression, they're called rishis. And within that word rishi comes from the word drishi, like Gita, gyaninas tattva darshina. Like we say darshan, you know, we want to go for darshan. But another, that it's based on seeing. So another, actually more common meaning of darshan in Sanskrit text is philosophy. You say, why philosophy? It's a way of seeing, a perspective, a philosophical perspective. So the rishis, they're seeing and experiencing the truth, the upper world, the chit jagat. And they're acting as mediums for expressing that into this plane. That is not a product of their imagination. It's a product of offering themselves as mediums for divine expression. Therefore, they're called rishis. Right. Sometimes Guru Maharaj say, the mantram is descending and passing through their consciousness into this plane. So, and they're very careful about this point. So no genuine work is the product of someone's imagination. No genuine spiritual work. It's always descending. Even when we hear Gita, which I find is interesting because the rational thinkers, particularly the Western world, they also like Bhagavad Gita. There's a list of great authors, thinkers who appreciate Bhagavad Gita. But for the sake of argument, someone could say, but Bhagavad Gita is spoken by, although it's Krishna, the medium is Sanjay. Right? Sanjaya Uvacha Dhritarashtra, that beginning part. Right? And admittedly, Sanjay was not there. Right? And he says at the end, Vyasa Prashada Shrutavan, by the mercy of Vyas, I heard this. That's how I heard it, because he wasn't there. So he's saying this was a mystic transmission. It's not like he was on the battlefield overhearing Krishna and Arjuna. But by the way, in that context, the leading authority in literary criticism. All these dialogues we hear in literature, he calls it overhearing. Or the characters in there, they're speaking something, they're listening to themselves, ostensibly, right? Hamlet, you know, to be or not to be. Who's he talking to? He's alone. So, that doesn't mean that we dismiss that, right? Or we say, was there really a guy named Hamlet who said all these things before we believe it? No, we hear something valuable that's expressed there and we have a tendency to accept it. And actually what is factual or objective becomes secondary. But back to Bhagavad Gita. So by his own admission, Sanjaya is not there. He's saying, by the mercy of Vyasa, I heard this divine conversation between Krishna and Arjuna. Now, a totally rational person should say, well, I'm not going to accept that. This man, maybe he's imagining these things. It would be, from a rational point of view, a legitimate point of contention. But the reason up to, and I hope I'm not suggesting this, before I said it, I even thought, do I want to put this into the ether? But I'm okay with it because of the answer. The answer is the substance of Bhagavad Gita is so overwhelming that the method of transmission is irrelevant. That's the point. The substance is so overwhelming, recognized by, atheists, agnostics, and theists alike. It's so overwhelming, the method of transmission is irrelevant. But, taking him at his word, he's saying, this came, I overheard I heard this divine conversation by the mercy of Vyasa. He, in a sense, empowered me. This was a mystic transmission, and I'm presenting that to you. And repeatedly, the books that we have are conversations that take place between sages, assemblies of divine personalities, and they're inquiring and answering. So, and you'll find in the pages of Chaitanya Charitamritam, in the beginning, in the foundational chapters, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, he has Krishna speaking in first person. When Krishna says, if someone's love and affection for me is, suppressed on account of their being overwhelmed by Aishwarya Gyan, too much awareness of the majestic aspect, meaning his divinity. He said, if that suppresses their natural love and affection, I'm disappointed. So yeah, these are, in quotes, Krishna is saying these things. That's when he says, when I'm playing with my friends, if in defeat I have to carry the victor on my shoulders, that gives me so much joy. That implying they've transcended the majestic aspect that they can ride the shoulders of the Lord. I've mentioned Garuda considers himself so fortunate, he has either Vishnu or Krishna riding his shoulders, he's flying through the air. But here, what's the difference? And that's a wonderful and beautiful thing. That we must understand. It's a wonderful, so wonderful and beautiful. It's such a beautiful image to conceive. But how confidential is Chaitanya Charitamritam? Here Krishna is saying, when I'm defeated by my devotee, my friends, and I have to carry one on my shoulders, I'm flying. That captures my heart. And then he goes a little bit further when he says the Bartsan sloka, Kore Bartsan, when my beloved Priya is, you can say chastising, or the word actually means like cursing me. He's saying, that is so sweet to my ear that I can't pay attention to the reverential hymns of the Vedas. This is all first person from Kaviraj Goswami and his book. Written by whom? He says, Madan Mohan is making me say these things. But, and what are we giving insight to? These books that are praising his supremacy, his divinity, the compassion exhibited in his avatars descending in this world, age after age, how many? Innumerable, as there are waves of the ocean. They're offering this kind of praise. He's saying, but when my beloved is cursing me for some offense, real or perceived, maybe nothing. It's just a quarrel of love. There may be nothing there. There's nothing. But she is cursing me. That is so sweet to my ear. All of these things are said in first person by Krishna. Is this Kaviraj Goswami's imagination? How does he know? Someone could say. We accept it, but someone could say, how does he know all these things that Krishna said this? Where did Krishna say that? There's no reference given. I'm not saying, in the so-and-so Purana, Krishna says this. There's just a series of statements that are attributed to Krishna. So, when Murari Gupta, when Mahaprabhu goes to his house and knocks on, and he opens the door, and there he is, and he's in Varaha Bhav, of the Varaha avatar. Imagine, he's there and looking like Varaha Dev. Sometimes Nimai Pandit, sometimes Varaha. You know, come in. He enters the house, and what does he do? We're told there's a water pitcher in the corner. They still have these in India. You can still see them. They're very round, and they have a spout in it. So it looks like the earth. And he goes and lifts that up, enacting that pastime. And just as a sidebar, we could say, also, why has Mahaprabhu come? To save the world. So it's an interesting parallel. But this is so astonishing, and Murari Gupta is stunned to see this. And what does Nimai Pandit, as Varaha avatar, say to him? Glorify me. You know, say some appropriate praise and glorification. And what does Murari Gupta say? How can a fallen soul like myself possibly glorify you? Only you can actually glorify you. And then your expansion, because there's Balaram, then Ananta. In your expansion of Ananta, Dave, we're told, the glories of the Lord are like jewels. They're like gems. And where are they kept? Where do you keep a treasure? The treasure of these gems are in the mouth of Ananta, Dave. So these jewel-like glorifications of Krishna or Mahaprabhu, they're coming from the mouth of Ananta Dev. So he's saying, only you can properly glorify you. But in this expression where he's saying, I'm not qualified to glorify you, only you can, he's actually presenting perfect glorification. This is his glorification. And everything he's saying is true. What descends into the heart of the devotee and then is expressed outward, it's not imagination, it's a combination of heart. It's more than that, it's heart. From the spiritual heart comes spiritual expression. The Lord descends into the heart of the devotee, and then from there, the expression comes. Once there was a servant of Prabhupada, like his personal servant. And he had many different ones from time to time. But about this one particular servant, he was saying why he was very good at what he does. And the voice said, why? And he said, he has no imagination. He's not thinking of ways that you think will be an improvement and then turn out to be what Gurudev would call a massacre. That does not mean not to use your body, mind, words, intelligence in the service of the Lord. But when it comes to divine expression, when it's real and substantial, it's descending from that plane into the heart of the devotee and being expressed from there. All divine things are like that. Nama, Rupa, Guna, Lila. So it means, and we're told in the Bhagavatam, Shraddhanvito Anushranayat Atabarnayedyat. Who can express these things? Who they faithfully heard from proper devotees. Just like the word fidelity, right? Fidelity. And why do they call it hi-fi, high fidelity? They're saying it's very like the original. All audio manufacturers, the higher ones, would pride themselves on saying that you can't tell the difference between this and if you were, you know, hearing this live. That's their claim, or they try to come close to that. That's what we mean by fidelity. It's a faithful representation of the original. But does that mean that it's like rote recitation? What was said, then you just literally, you memorize that and repeat that. Sukadev heard from Vyasadev. Right? Narada, we know, he came, chastised Vedavyas, and in 10 slokas gave the Bhagavatam. And then Vyas expanded upon that. But then Sukadev got from Vyas. And later he's speaking in that group of sages, and Guru Maharaj points out, who is in the audience? Narada and Vyas. So there's Sukadev, and Guru Maharaj said, they're very eager to hear, because they're saying, you know, he's like our boy. I gave it to you, you gave it to him. Like, and Guru Maharaj said, and they're both very eager, thinking, what new color and new shape is it going to take when it comes out of him? They don't expect that he will just verbatim. No. That's why if you look in the Bhagavatam, there's Vyas, but there's also Sukadev, and then what? Suta Goswami, he was there. He's telling parts of the Bhagavatam. And again, what is it? Different sages having discussions. And to put a finer point on it, we hear the Brihad Bhagavatamritam of Sanatana Goswami. Then, and what are we told that in the beginning? That Parikshit Maharaj, after he's heard the Bhagavatam from Sukadev and everyone is leaving, he's shutting down his senses, like the way someone turns, the last person turns the lights out. He's going to shut down his senses. And so everyone is left. And he's waiting for what is his name? Tarkshaka, the so-called snake bird, to come and bite him, who in the Bhagavatam comes in the form of a Brahmin giving dandavats and bites him. Like, but anyway, before that, then what happened? Uttara, his mother Uttara, comes running in. So he's sitting there ready to just completely like self-immolate. And she comes in and she says, son, I know you just heard all of this nectar from Sukadev. Please, can you, you know, give some nectar to your dear mother? And he said, yeah, I'm glad you came right now, because I was turning off my senses. I would have been inaccessible. And again, and by the way, how do we know this? We're told Jaimini Rishi is in the bushes, like listening. So then he starts speaking, right? And we notice, or we can't help but notice, when you just read Brihad Bhagavatam without Sanatana Goswami Prabhu's commentary, you think, if you've read Srimad Bhagavatam, you might first think, like, well, this doesn't sound like the Bhagavatam that Sukadev told Parikshit Maharaj. Right? When you read the Tika, the commentary of Sanatana Goswami, he will, when some verse is spoken, he'll say, this is like this verse and the 55th chapter of the 10th canto. He starts showing you connections that are not obvious. So this is very interesting. He's ostensibly repeating what was heard, but the whole thing appears to be new. And before that, we heard at the very beginning, before this was told, that Maharaj Janamejoy, his son, he's inquiring from Jaimini Rishi, who I just mentioned was hiding in the bushes, overhearing what Parikshit Maharaj told to Uttara. And Maharaj Janamejoy says, Vishampayana Rishi, one of the things he's famous for is Mahabharata recitation. And he's saying, Jaimini is also doing that. So Janamejoy says, I heard Mahabharata from Vishampayana Rishi previously, and that was a wonderful thing. He's saying, and he's just heard Mahabharata from Jaimini Rishi. He's saying, but there's something about your telling of the Mahabharata. And here we are with the same stories, now going in the other direction. He's saying, but there was this particular madhura quality to your telling. And that madhura quality, that sweetness, has awakened a desire in my heart to taste some more of that. So two personalities told the same story. He got a different awakening internally from the telling. And that's when Jaimini Rishi starts telling about what becomes the Brihad Bhagavatamritam. So, this is not their imagination, but it shows divine inspiration can descend in the heart of the devotee and take on new color, new quality, new characteristics, as Veda Vyasa and Narada expected to hear from Sukadev. So if someone were to think on the basis of what I said before, so there's no room for imagination or not imagination, but for new color, new quality, new something fresh, not at all. In fact, that is the necessity. New, all these books we have, when Kaviraj Goswami is giving Charitamritam, he goes out of his way to praise Vrindavan Das Thakur repeatedly. And he says, if he's described something in his Chaitanya Bhagavat, why would I want to describe the same thing? You know, there might be some offense on my part for doing that. But where he didn't describe something or didn't describe it in detail, those things I'll deal with. The other things I'll refer summarily. So we see the Adi Leela of Chaitanya Charitamrita is the smallest. The Adi Leela of Chaitanya Bhagavat is very large. Right? And it's there are elaborate descriptions of the early life of Nimai Pandit, up to 24 years of age. Whereas that is more or less summarized by Kaviraj Goswami, and his emphasis begins substantially in the Madhya Leela after the sannyas of Mahaprabhu. So they're giving different perspective. So here we see, in one instance we have, they're telling us the same thing, but with a different quality of telling. In the other case, they're avoiding redundancy and telling unknown as hitherto unknown aspects of divine pastimes or meetings. And we will conclude that they're giving something fresh and original. If you look at the poetry of Srila Guru Maharaj, you see, like the Thai say, same, same, but different. Same, same as Rupa Goswami, but different. Chaitanyastakam of Rupa Goswami. Raso dama kamar buddha madura damojula tanur. Jatinam utankshas tarani koti vidyoti basana. Hiranyanam lakshmi barana bivavang angika rucha. Satchaitanna kime punar apidushor yashati vadam. Raso dama kama arbuda. Kama arbuda means 10 million cupids. So in like, and raso dama, raso udam, in full blown cupidity, and I'm repurposing that word, right, to mean a full blown rasic expression of these cupids, saying, this is the sweetness. Raso dama kamar buddha madhur ujvala. This radiant sweetness of Mahaprabhu could be is comparable in this way. Right. That's Rupa Goswami's description. Right. Then what does Guru Maharaj say in the Prema Dhamma Stotram? Svarna koti darpa nava dehavarna gauravam padma parijata banditanga sorabam. Here it is. Koti kami murchitangri rupa rasa rangaram prema dama deva meva nomi gora sundaram. So this is very beautiful. Guru Maharaj said, 10 million cupids? Yes. Koti kami. That means his way of saying 10 million cupids. Murchitangri rupa rasa. When they see the beauty of the form of Mahaprabhu, 10 million cupids faint to see that beauty. It's so sweet, so intense, so beautiful. They faint. They can't maintain consciousness. Similar, but different. A different perspective. And not based on imagination, but reality. When Sri Rupa says, Sri Chaitanya Kame Punar Api Drishor, there's that word again, Yasyati Vadam, saying, what I saw with these eyes, I saw what I'm describing here, I saw with these eyes. Will I ever see that again? But what are those eyes? Who are those eyes? The eyes of Srila Rupa Goswami? We aspire to what his way of seeing, Sri Rupa's way of seeing. That is our aspiration. So, we've been told to give our attention to Amnaya, Amnoi, the descending divine revelation. What's descending from the upper world into this plane through the medium of not only consciousness, but Krishna consciousness. Those who are Krishna conscious. Yes, Prabhu.
Question from Kunti Priya, Moscow. Recently, we were celebrating the appearance day of Nityananda Prabhu. And in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 17, verses from 13 to 15, it is described, so I'm reciting. One day Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited to Lord Nityananda Prabhu a six-armed form bearing a conch shell, disc, club, lotus flower, bow, and flute. Thereafter the Lord showed him his four-armed form, standing in a three-curved posture. With two hands he played upon a flute, and in the other two he carried a conch shell and disc. Finally, the Lord showed Nityananda Prabhu his two-armed form of Krishna, the son of Maharajananda, simply playing on his flute, his bluish body dressed in yellow garments. So the question is, What should we consider as chintya in this Adhokshaja Leela, and what is the ontological significance of this Leela?
That was quoting the Chaitanya Bhagavat, correct? Chaitanya Charitamritam? That cannot be.
So it is Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela 17, chapter 17, verse 13 to 15.
Says that Mahaprabhu revealed this to Nityananda.
Yes.
And you have the Chaitanya Charitamrita open.
Yes.
To that. Let me see the Bengali.
Okay. Okay.
I can't make it go to like the next page. Oh. I didn't recall this as being in this book. Where does it? I can't make it go. Oh, okay. Where is the beginning of this book?
Very beginning.
Yeah.
The beginning of chapter 7.
I see. Well, I can't look at this now, but I can say something similar, because it's, you know, I thought that was in the Chaitanya Bhagavat or elsewhere, but if it's there, it's there. I was going to mention that in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, repeatedly, Nimai Pandit is referred to as Vaikunteshwar, or Vaikunthanath, or Gaur Krishna, Gaur Narayan, excuse me. So, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, avatar sar Gaur avatar. Mahaprabhu is Swayam Bhagavan. So he has not only all the avatars, but all the Vishnus, everyone. So, and this is referenced by Kaviraj Goswami himself in the beginning of the Adi Leela. wherein he's saying that if you describe Mahaprabhu as Kiradakshai Vishnu, that's not incorrect. He's saying, but does that truly express all of his glories? Is that the fullest expression of appreciation? Right. So sometimes I think what we're seeing here, I'd have to study it more carefully, but is that he's all of these, but we see at last the indication of Krishna alone, or Shyamasundara Krishna. And what it's reminiscent of, to me, is, because when you say Shadbhuj, the Shadbhuj Murti that was revealed by Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And there we hear what the two hands playing the flute, then the Ramachandra bow, arrow, and the Kamandalu and the Mahaprabhu. So if we look in the text, it's described as Ishwaramurti. So it tells us that he's revealing his divinity to him. Remember, up to this point, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is, he thinks he's an exalted devotee, or a Siddha Purush, a Mahapurush, but he's not accepting his divinity. So now he's revealing his divinity to them. Who was Ramachandra? Who was Krishna? He's now come again as Sri Krishna Chaitanya. And Sarvabhauma later in his Shataka, the 100 slokas he writes, writes along these lines. So, Ishwaramurti, he's revealing his divinity. When it comes to Ramananda, it says, Rasaraj Mahabhav Dui Ekarup, that Rasaraj Krishna and Mahabhav Radharani, they're combined as one. That he only revealed to Ramananda. And that is his actual internal identity. There's no need to him to reveal to Ramananda his divinity. He already knows that. But he's revealing his, and I like to say, his ecstatic emotional interior, that really this is Rasaraj Krishna combined with Mahabhav Radharani as one. This is something extraordinary, never before seen. And as Guru Maharaj would say, see how they mingle. And then Ramananda faints. That is the Ishta Devata, the worshipful deity of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Therefore, in all the altars, there's Gauranga and Radha Govinda, or Radha Krishna, in various names. Guru Gauranga, Gandharvika Giridhari, etc. So it's points to some sort of gradation culminating in Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. Why he's showing this to Nityananda Prabhu here, I would have to study that. But on the basis of the revelation to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, this can be observed, right? Because when we say divinity, divine, that's still a general thing. So is he Vaikunthanath? Yes. But is that the end of it? No. He's more than that. And that is Kaviraj Goswami's word. Is he Kiradakshaya Vishnu? Yes. All the Purusha avatars are expansions from him ultimately. Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshai Vishnu, Kiradakshai Vishnu, and it's through Kiradakshai Vishnu that all avatars descend. So you think, yes, but, and he says this in the beginning, remember, he's going to be telling us who he is deep internally. Radha Bhavadyuti Subalita Nomi Krishna Sarupam. Krishna enveloped by the heart and halo of Srimati Radharani. His Anta Krishna Bahir Gauram Darshitangari Vaibhavam. Internally is Krishna. Bahir Anta Krishna Bahir Gauram. But Shama Sundar has become Gauranga Sundar due to being enveloped by the heart of Srimati Radharani. Yes.
Maharaj, why chasing dreams never brings satisfaction? Are we doomed to never-ending frustration in this world? If yes, then in what sort of disguise we may find our blessing?
Who is this from?
From me.
From you?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Prabhupada says in one place, when one realizes that the material world is a, and I'm paraphrasing, something like along the lines of a never-ending source of frustration, and it behooves such a person to approach the spiritual master, take shelter. But I like to include a never-ending series of humiliations. Not just frustration, of humiliation. Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi Dukkha Doshanu Darshanam. The darshan, the proper way of seeing this world, is that anitya asukam lok, it's a temporary miserable place. So if you think, well, I'm going to employ the pleasure principle, right? Meaning, I'm going to spend the maximum amount of my time trying to minimize suffering and maximize enjoyment. The verse says, anityam asukam. Not only is it a miserable place, it's a temporary miserable place. So even if you make some arrangement to minimize the suffering and maximize the enjoyment, still it'll be taken away from you. So then the short time that we have here, it wouldn't seem prudent to put the maximum amount of our energy in that line. Whereas what we're advised, keep the life in the objective world as simple as possible. Prabhupada liked to invoke the aphorism, simple living, high thinking. Keep the objective aspect of your life simple as possible so that you can spend the maximum time, effort, and energy in internal culture. And again, internal culture meaning sadhu, shastra, guru, Vaishnav. We want to come under the influence of their way of seeing. Speaking of Sarvabhauma, when Mahaprabhu came back from his tour, he's praising Sarvabhauma and says, I just toured South India. I met representatives from all these different traditions and even within Vaishnavism, and I don't find anyone who compares to you, Sarvabhauma. And Ramananda, he was told by Sarvabhauma to meet with him. So that's an exception. He said, so I didn't meet anyone like you. And Guru Maharaj said, smiling, and he said, Mahaprabhu is endorsing himself. Because he said, what is Sarvabhauma? in a sense, he's the creation of Mahaprabhu. So he's saying, after I got through with you, when he upgraded him to Gauralila, Brihaspati, the guru of the gods, Ishwaramurti revealed his divinity to him, and then Sarvabhauma was converted by Mahaprabhu. He said, I don't find anyone like you. So Gaurav said, he's indirectly endorsing himself. But, so we say, self-oblivion, but not self-annihilation. So Sarvabhauma, in this sense, has been reconfigured, we could say, I think, by Mahaprabhu. We're presenting ourselves to Guru and Vaishnava, in a sense, to be remade. Right? Yo yata vichari kichu nahi pai. If you examine me, you don't find anything of value. But, tomara korunasar, your mercy can work wonders. By your grace, I may become useful. So, if the frustration of existence pushes one toward surrender, then is it a bad thing? Maybe it's a good thing. Chatur vidha vajantimam jana sukriti norjana arto jigyasa artarti gyani chabaratarshapa. Krishna's saying, four types of persons surrender to me. Distressed is one of them. You can say distressed, frustrated. Frustrated trying to establish themselves as a independent center here, an exploiting agent, expanding the circumference of their exploiting capacity. When somebody's frustrated by that, then tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasu shre uttamam. Then what you should do, get a guru and inquire Shreya Uttamam, about what's ultimately beneficial for you. Forget about trying to figure out the short term, wasting your time and energy on short term perceived benefit, when actually what is really in your self-interest is long term. That's Shreya Uttamam. Oh, Kunti. Vipadakshantutakshasvatatratatrajagadguru bhavato darshanam yatshad apunar bhavadarshanam. She's saying adverse circumstances are to the advantage of the spiritually inclined and progressive person, because out of necessity it will drive one to seek shelter. And their concentration, their focus, their remembrance will be improved or more intense on account of adversity. And Bishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur says in the his commentary in the 10th canto, the famous sloka, talks about the material world, samasritaye padapallava plavam mahat padam punya yasho murari bhavam budhir vatsa parampadam yad vipadam natitesham. It says that the material world is like an ocean of nescience or ignorance, misconception. But when you take shelter of the devotee, it becomes reduced to a drop. It literally says, vatsa param, the hoof print of a calf, how much water you can have in there. Right? So in other words, they're saying, what is oceanic becomes reduced to a drop. How is that possible? I mean, think about it. How does an ocean become a drop? By a change of perspective, right? That which is oceanic is seen as a drop, and easily one is able to, mayamitam tarantite, mameva ye prapadyante, mayamitam tarantite. One can easily, cross beyond it. So that means coming in, taking shelter, Sadhu Shastra Guru Vaishnav. But very interestingly here, Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur says, so that's generally devotees, they have some fear of the mundane. And it's good, a healthy fear of the mundane. They realize Maya is so powerful, she can overwhelm any one of us at any time. He said, but here, the devotee who's fully sheltered and sees that it's reduced to the water left in the hoof print of the calf, he's saying, well, cows are very auspicious. So like we did the Abhishek the other day, if you bathe the cow, that water would be actually a good thing. He's saying, so this is Vishwanath's interpretation. What was seen previously as in fear-inducing and insurmountable, now it's showing another quality or characteristic. It may be friendly to the devotee. So on that point, when our mundane aspirations are like unfulfilled, but there's another word. Like not realized, not fulfilled, but there's another word. Anyway, I can't think of that. Then the spiritually awakened person will actually experience some happiness, some relief. They were saved from that entanglement. Then they can see it as a kind of mercy. Like, maybe the word was frustrated, but anyway, I'll be thinking about it all night. But Prabhupada, giving himself as an example, quoted the Bhagavatam, which says, Yasya hamanugranami harishe tadanam shanai. You're saying, someone who is favored by the Lord, he takes everything away from them. And he's laughing and saying, if anyone, devotees often express like, they'll do a business and this business will be very successful, then they'll take the profits from that and the whole world will become Krishna conscious. There's this, similar things like that. But if you could believe it for anybody, I would believe it for Prabhupada. Like, if he did, it would happen. But he tried sincerely. He had a business. He was an inventor. All these things. He had some interesting ideas. And it was not successful. In fact, it became increasingly unsuccessful. Just crashed. But what that meant is not to pursue these things anymore. His sister told him, Prabhu, you're just meant to preach. Like, imagine that, his sister. And she's saying, whatever family obligations remain for you, I'll take care of them. You just go to Vrindavan, you preach. What a wonderful sister. Right? But she could see that. You're just meant for that. And so he's thinking, materially speaking, his whole world fell apart. So you could make a case, at least in theory, if that didn't happen, would we have Prabhupada? It's just a rhetorical question. This is the way it happened. And he gave his own, he quoted this sloka, laughing when he and Guru Maharaj are sitting together on the Vyasasan in Mayapur. Yasyaham anugranami harishe tadanam shanai. If the Lord favors you, he takes everything away from you. And I know every time I say this, all the devotees are like, really? they're saying, oh no. Right. But so then I revisited that and I found the qualifier saying, takes away all the things that are obstacles. Then they go, oh, okay. So that new thing I was thinking of getting, it won't be an obstacle. All right, okay. Then they're okay again. But no one likes the other. And if Krishna really likes you, he's going to humiliate you, take everything away from you. Everyone will abandon you. And you go, joy. Hari Bol. Can't wait. But there, so we say, those things that are unfavorable, that are obstacles, he's taking away. We're talking about that, how when you find yourself in these situations, as inevitably everybody does, a spiritually progressive person, it's like jujitsu, can take that movement and turn it into something in their favor. That's how you're to see it. Tatenu kampam susamikshamano bunjane vatma kritam ripakam. That anukampam means mercy. And what are we told here? Su-samiksha. Samiksha means to examine. But su-samiksha, you could say, is like scrutinize. So it means to, when something unfavorable has happened, let's just be blunt about it. We don't like it. It's not what how we envision. It's not the outcome we envisioned, right? And it's very disturbing to us, and endlessly frustrating. That's the one level of observation, right? And analysis. But here it's saying, if you go deeper, and this is a message to a devotee, right? It's telling it. But look deeper, and this is from Brahma, who was humiliated. Remember, the higher you are, the greater the possibility for humiliation. Like Dostoevsky said, humiliation is the most intense form of consciousness. So there you go. So Brahma is humiliated after the Brahma Vimohan Leela brings about this intense consciousness, and all these beautiful prayers come streaming out of him, including this one, where he's giving advice and is based on his own experience. He's saying, so, I am Brahma. Am I embarrassed in front of all these gods and goddesses? Yes. I was made a fool of. Yes. I made a fool out of myself, major league. But if I look at this deeper, like, how merciful was Krishna to do this to me, to destroy that ego, that ego of prestige, that and everything that goes with that. Because we're told, avirinchi amangalam. There's even an auspiciousness in the life of Brahma. So he's saying, when I look deeply at what just happened, I see it's Krishna's mercy on me. How beautiful and how wonderful it is. So we can say, that's very easy to say. You can quote these slokas. You can point to the Brahma Stuti and the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. But here I am. I'm endlessly frustrated, crying, suffering, etc. Is this really your advice to me? And I say, yes. That's why it's there. That if you can be a faithful devotee and just say, this sort of advice is being given, is there any way I can re-examine this on a deeper level and see perhaps Krishna's in the background and maybe saving me from something that would truly be inauspicious? There are many things. It's not all known to me. It's known to him. For if he's in control, and I believe he is, this is the way it's playing out. Do I want to be, on his side or some other side? Do I want to move independent? That's spiritual suicide, right? To try and move independently of his divine will. How long is that going to work? That's not going to end well. So then we think, as painful as it might be, humiliating or frustrating, Krishna's in the background. Once someone was calling on the phone and saying horrible things to Gurudev. Someone just totally mad, whatever, but that was happening. And so I told Maharaj, when we knew, it's like, we know who it is and what they're going to do. And I said to Gurudev, I said, I can take this call. You don't have to answer it this time. I can take it and deal with that. And Gurudev surprised, he said, yes, Maharaj, I know. He said, but I'm thinking, why is Krishna allowing me to hear these things? And I went like, oh. What was upsetting externally, he was like very curious, like, why is Krishna allowing this vile thing to pour into my ear? He was looking deep, like, is there some message for me? Something for me to, you know, he started examining things. And I thought, oh, that's the devotee. That's the devotee's way of seeing. When and the verse Swalpam up yasya dharmasya trayate mahato bayat neha bikramanasho sti pratyavya navidyate, saying a little advancement on this path protects one from the most dangerous type of fear. So sometimes it said, oh, receding into the lower species. You have this opportunity as a human being to cultivate Krishna consciousness and then go into the lower species. That would be horrifying, right? But Guru Maharaj, again, gave another take on this once that really surprised me. He said, that may be the greatest fear in general. He said, but for a devotee, not. He said, a devotee's greatest fear is that their service isn't being accepted. Not whether they're going up or down or like, Narayana Puraksarve na kutaschana bibhyati swarga pavarg narakeshu tulyarta darshina chitraketu. No, their fear is their service is not being accepted. I thought, well, that takes it to another level. And as indicated in that verse, whether they're in the heavenly or hellish, that's not their concern. Do they have sevan? Is that being accepted? Like we said about Yudhamanya Prabhu, that's all you ever want to know. Is his service approved by Gurudev? He doesn't need to know anything else, but that he needs to know. That's pure devotion. Right. So, then we, if we, how do you say, accept that as our standard, then we'll realize that these other concerns we have are negligible. They become nothing more than preferences. Right? But the real substantial thing we want, we say we're aspiring servitors. We never say of ourselves that we've achieved that. We may say of other devotees they are, but not of ourselves. We're aspiring servitors. And Krishna's in control. And this is the last thing I'll say. And that famous Bhagavad Gita slogan where it says, Bhoktaram Yogya Tapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. They're saying, I own everything and I'm controlling everything. And everything's meant for my enjoyment. I think, ouch. Oh, gee, what about us? Don't we get anything? He's saying, so that's the situation. He owns everything, control everything, and everything's meant for his enjoyment. And Guru Maharaj would add, including you, including us. That's a beautiful thing. So that means it's not like, don't think separate. No, including us. Oh, then that might imply that he cares about us, that he is not insensitive to what our situation is. So then says, Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. This line makes everything okay. He said, and I'm your dearest friend. So then, oh wait, who owns everything, who's controlling everything, and for whom everything is meant to enjoy, he's my best friend. Like if you had a best friend locally or nationally or whatever, then you realize that's a good thing for you because your best friend owns everything and controls everything. So it means he's friendly to you. So, and the last line says, Gyatva Shantim Ruchtati. Knowing this, you can be free from anxiety. So it means knowing this, all right, what happened is distressing, disturbing to me, but Krishna, Guru Maharaj said, the friendly hand of Krishna is in the background. He's not against me. He's not trying to make me fail. The teacher who examines the students is not trying to fail them. The teacher wants them to go to the next level. The students may resent it, especially the so-called pop quiz or flash quiz, when they just say without, you know, there's the scheduled time for examination. Then there's sometimes they go, all right, everybody close the books. Pop quiz. And you hear a collective groan, everyone. Oh. And then some people think, oh, the teacher is mean. The teacher's not mean. The teacher's trying to see, are you absorbing the lesson? Guru Maharaj said, the child who said, I didn't do anything wrong, they need to be punished. He said, but the child who comes and goes, what I did was wrong, I'm sorry. He said, they don't need to be punished because they're acknowledging, they're being honest. So if we're being honest, then these will be the necessary conclusions we come to. That, you know, in the background is Krishna, and if things are playing out this way, it must be for my ultimate benefit and good. And a faithful devotee has to embrace that sort of conception in a heartfelt way. Hare Krishna.